VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Saturday morning, it's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, live in the studio, bringing you just all kinds of fun and games. But before we get into this one, I have a very important public announcement to make. My daughter turned 40 today.
Yeah.
My oldest daughter, middle child. And she's having so much fun with it.
Yeah. Or if she's looking for sympathy, she won't get any from her older brother.
Well, I'll tell you who doesn't get sympathy is the father of someone turning 40, because that's a lot scarier to me than...
I mean, we already knew you were old, though.
Yeah, but probably older now just knowing that. Won't be long till the last one in line flicks over to the 40s.
This is true.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. But anyway, I digress, as I'm... so want to do. Our regular listeners, welcome back. Hope you can stick with us for the whole hour. And if you're new to the show, whether you're driving by or somebody told you about it or whatever, again, see if you can stick around the whole time. I promise you, you will get a lot of up-to-date information, and we will give you a bunch of information on the topics that we want to talk about. And if you don't like those, then all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. And we will immediately put you to the front of the line, and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. And it's not that there aren't things going on out there. In fact, I've got a thing. I don't think I'm going to get to it today just because it's tax weekend, but by next week I should. And it's about, it's a little look back over my 17 years in the radio business and some of the types of questions that we've been asked. You know, one thing I think about, our show is still pretty new. We're going into our fifth year now, solidly into it, actually. And I'm not sure that everybody out there completely understands all the elements of personal financial planning and all the topics that we are willing and able to discuss with people. So I thought I'd bring you some of the highlights one of these first days. If we get to it today, good. If we don't, that's fine, too. It'll be here for next week. So, anyway, as I said, 222-TALK, lines are open. Give us a call anytime. Well, today is an interesting day to look back over a week of market action, because long about Tuesday night, I was starting to scratch my head thinking, you know, this isn't really feeling all that good. I wonder what's going on out there. And then everything changed.
Yeah, I mean, even if we hadn't had a great day on Friday, which we did, the markets weren't going to be down that much. We're talking less than 1% probably. Yeah. So it was going to be a flat week either way, but we did have a really nice rally on Friday, and it did turn into a fairly good week. So I was pleasantly surprised with the news. Friday morning was driven by China, a little bit of renewed optimism about getting that deal done. And that really pushed the Dow up almost 270 points on Friday.
Well, that and their economic data, which you've been talking about.
Yep.
Europe and Asia both. Adam's
it's
been
not
saying
as bad
it for
as
weeks.
They're telling you.
The volume of trade that's going on across the world is not consistent with the stories you are hearing.
Exactly. And the international markets have been really terrible for the most part, outside of a few examples like China this year or Brazil last year. But and I think there's some good bargains out there. That's my take on
it.
And
in the Eurozone now, markets are starting to perk up.
Yeah, for sure. And that's with the hard Brexit sort of looming out there. So, which I think is going to be the biggest non-event.
You know
in
what
the
they're trying to do
of the world.
They're trying to prevent ever having to do it by just continually delaying
kick the can.
Because
kick the can.
Theresa May knows that the second it happens, she's most likely toast.
Yeah, I mean, well, she's already basically admitted as much, didn't she?
Well, she's at least warm bread by now.
Yeah. So anyways, interesting stuff going on across the world, but let's bring it back to home. The Dow was essentially flat. It moved 12.7 points lower, which came out to 0.0%. So I would say that's pretty flat.
That's pretty flat.
Yep. And then the S&P 500 was up 0.5%, and the NASDAQ gained 0.6%. So not a bad week for something that looked pretty gloomy on Thursday night. Friday really turned things around. The other good news on Friday was a really stellar earnings report from JP Morgan before the bell on Friday morning. So they beat on sales and earnings. And I'm thinking you might want to get used to that this quarter, because yes, companies have been sandbagging like crazy.
Three consecutive quarters they've been sandbagging.
Yes. And this was the worst one by far.
Yes.
Was last quarter. Yeah. So
they went from being novice to semi-pro to pro in those three quarters.
Right. So I'm not going to say that earnings are going to be fantastic, but what I will say is they're going to be way better than forecast. That's my prediction. So,
and I'm with you 100%.
I think that'll be reflected in the beat rates on both sales and earnings. So the other reason that I'm a little optimistic today is that some of the data this week, it looks like the economy has magically turned around from the first quarter.
Who knew?
I know. It was shocking. The government shutdown, do you think that might have had anything to do with the wacky data that we saw in January, February? I mean, it's just too coincidental.
Yeah, for about 2.5 months, we've been telling you not to believe any economic data so far this year, because the shutdown itself caused a lot of delays in processing numbers, and I think it had a little impact on the economy, and I think it left some bad taste in some people's mouth in the government. And I don't know if it's because they lost their jobs for a while and got paid for it, or if it was because that mean, nasty President Trump made him go back to work.
Or both. My favorite report was the retail sales report for December, which said that this retail sales shrank.
Yeah.
And if you talk to just about any retailer that isn't a bricks and mortar retailer that's been going out of business for 20 years, Sears. But
been gone for 10 and didn't know it.
Exactly. Radio Shack. It's... Everyone else was saying how great of a retail sales shopping season it was. Amazon said it was their best ever. Mm-hmm. And then it comes out that retail sales declined. No. That's not right. It's just someone should have done a quick, does this make sense check before they release that report in January or February. I think it came out. It just doesn't make any sense. So anyways, some of the things we saw this week were jobless claims. They had been on a little bit of an uptrend, again, data not necessarily matching
prior to April.
Right. And people were getting a little bit concerned. Some of our more trusted sources were getting a little bit concerned. And then all of a sudden that reversed a couple weeks ago, and they just hit 196,000, which happens to be the lowest level in more than 50 years. Mm-hmm. And 50 years ago, the population of the U.S. was more than 30% less than it is today. And this number is not indexed for population growth. So the fact we're seeing it is pretty astounding.
That and other data is leading me to ask this very poignant question. Where is that pesky recession?
It just won't come around like they want it to.
But you know how the media do it. If you say it often enough, it will happen.
Right.
Except they're saying it so often and it's not happening. Maybe one of these days they're going to have to admit it, that how are things? Pretty good out there, frankly. Real good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Jolt's number came down a little bit.
Yeah, I saw that. It did. It dropped about 500,000 jobs, but that we'll get to that after the break. But
yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about the whole population shifting thing and what's going on out there. It's really a good time right now to be in the market, and I hope you are there and stay there. A little bit more when we come back. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And we have a trivia question today brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. For those of you who don't know, April has been designated Financial Literacy Month. And today's question involves financial literacy. And you know, the inverse of that is financial illiteracy. But I'm going on the positive side of it today. Recently, the states were ranked from 1 to 50 as to their financial literacy, where 1 is the most literate and 50 is the least literate. Where does Florida stand in that list? And I would be happy to take it plus or minus 1 from its actual number. So where does Florida stand among 50 states in financial literacy? And then we'll talk a little bit about some of the implications of that, too. But anyway, back to the markets, he said, smiling.
Yeah, well, actually, I wanted to talk a little bit about the JOLTS report. Mm-hmm. It dropped by about, the number of open jobs dropped by about 500,000 from last month.
Incredible, and, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a big number. And it missed estimates by about the same number. So does this mean that those jobs disappeared?
I doubt it.
I don't think so. It's actually pretty likely that a bunch of them got filled. In fact, the net gain in employment for this month was 2.7 million people. That's the, what is that? The number of people that took jobs minus the number of jobs or number of people that are no longer employed during the month. So that number varies quite a bit month to month. It's not a very good indicator of anything, but the fact that the open jobs dropped by 500,000 sounds at first like a big miss, but it's not if those jobs are getting filled.
Yeah, and so, it had only recently climbed that high, too. And you wonder if there's a little sampling error maybe brought to you by the,
it's a big drop,
the shutdown or whatever.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, when it jumps up by a big percent like that, and then a couple months later it's back down, you wonder if there wasn't just a little blip in the data.
Could be.
Point is, there's still more jobs open than people to fill.
Yeah, 7 million. I mean, that's a lot of open jobs. And if you talk to any employer right now, I think you will find that their biggest problem is finding, keeping, good people, qualified people. They're just really tough to find.
Yeah, and if you're out there looking to change or looking for a job, you should know that employers have had to adapt to this job market shortage in several ways. One is that some have dropped their educational requirements, but nearly all of them have added to their training schedules. So if you want to get trained to do something else and not have to go to school or not pay for it, in fact, get paid to do it, go start applying for jobs that you would really like to do. And you might just nail yourself up a situation where you get a whole new skill and get a paycheck at the same time.
Yep.
And it'll improve you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's something that 10 years ago you never would have seen. People were not willing to train anyone because they could put out a job opening and 6 qualified people would apply that day.
Yeah, and you know what's going on in secondary, post-secondary education too, which is becoming something of a crisis of its own, as much as I dislike that word. But kids are going way into debt and too many of them are getting degrees that just don't sell in the marketplace. If you're coming out of high school and you're really not wildly enthusiastic about being a doctor or a lawyer or something very specific, you might want to just go shop around a little bit, see what you might learn independently. Yeah. Always go back to school.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah. The other thing that shows how good the job market is the quit rate. It's still pretty strong at 2.3%. Those are people that are voluntarily leaving their jobs, and in most cases, that's because they either have another job, a better job typically lined up, or they're so confident about finding a new job that they just aren't willing to put up with a bad situation or a bad job. And that's a strong number, and it's one of my favorite indicators of how strong the job market is.
A quick question about the markets. Are we going to see the new highs that will designate this bull market that we're in an even longer bull market?
My guess is yes.
Me too.
So, I mean, we're really close right now.
Mm-hmm. An interesting point that I read about this morning. If you look at the S&P 500 index, most people probably don't know that that does not count dividends. And in fact, in the annuity business, a lot of people know what an equity index annuity is. And one of the things that the annuity salespeople do not like to tell you is that when the equity index annuity is tied to the S&P 500 index, it excludes the dividends, which historically are about a quarter of the return from the S&P. They don't tell you that because then it would sound like you're getting even less. Oh, and by the way, you are. But that's a story for another day. But if you were to go back here recently and reinvest the dividends that have been paid over the index period, whatever time you're measuring, the S&P 500 Total Return Index is at an all-time high. That's, broke every record ever.
Yeah.
So that's not the absolute definition of the extended bull market, but it's a mighty good indicator that we're going to get both of them, I believe,
yeah,
and soon.
And it's actually a much better measure of the S&P as well. We invest on the total return philosophy, which means that you combine stock price appreciation plus the dividends, and you add them together and look at your total return. Why would you exclude one portion of something that is actually coming into your account? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it depends what you're trying to do. If you're trying to measure an index against itself, so you have to use consistent data to show what the changes in the index are. But if you're trying to create an investment plan, then you have to look at total return, not just appreciation or not just income or whatever, which is what we do and is what we've been telling all of our clients since we've been in this. And I just thought that was kind of an interesting statistic this morning, because when you think about it, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, if you look at SPY, which is the one of the, actually I think it is the largest ETF that is traded
it
today.
It just absolutely mimics the S&P 500.
Right, and has a very
index.
Right, has a very low expense ratio. It's a really good, it's a 0.09% expense ratio. So it'll be a little bit less than the index over time, but you barely will notice it. It has a 12-month yield, according to my software, of 1.8%. So if you exclude 1.8% of return over multiple years, that's a huge difference between what actually happened and what you're saying happened.
Like studying the inflation rate, it may not sound like 2% a year is going to be much, but look down the road 20 or 30 years, and it's shocking.
Definitely.
All right. Anything else you want to say about the market? Except
we did see we're seeing inflation data coming in stronger than expected, but
especially imports.
But I'll warn you that about 75% of that is due to the big rise in the price of oil recently. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are projecting $80 oil by this summer.
Pulled back a little Friday, but it's been on a good tear.
It's been on a tear. So don't be surprised if gas gets expensive going into the summer driving season.
Speaking of gas getting expensive, I'm so glad you said that.
All right.
And I didn't even prompt him. Gasoline at the pump is now up for 59 consecutive days.
That's a lot.
That has not happened since at least 15 years ago. And their data going back pre-2004 isn't quite as concise as it is now, so it could even be longer. This is a long uptick. Now, historically, what's going to happen is you get to the 4th of July, and it will have just peaked. And once that driving season is over, it starts to wane. And then you get past Labor Day, and more driving discontinues itself. And then it usually tanks back down to the beginning of the next year and starts back up again. So if you're looking for ways to play that, you can. There are ETFs like UGA that tracks the price of gasoline. If you just sort of watch carefully and figure out the pattern of it, it's actually possible to make some money in that by buying early in the year and selling around in June.
Yeah, just be careful with UGA and USO. They are K-1
testing
funds,
yep.
And you will get a K-1 at the end of the year, and it might not come by the time your taxes are due, so just be aware of that if you want to buy those.
And speaking of such things, we just had an instance in our client base where a K-1 came in late, and it made so much difference that she saved over $2,000.
Over $2,000, yeah.
So when that K-1 comes in and you look at it and say, what is this? Don't forget to make sure that that goes to your tax preparer.
Yes, definitely. Those are very important, and they are. It's really annoying, but they sometimes come after tax day, which is right around the corner. So,
well, the same government that tells you that April 15th is your filing date,
right,
tells K-1 people that you don't really have to send these out until May.
Which just makes so much sense. But if you do invest like that and you know you're getting some, it might make sense just to go ahead and file an extension and don't worry about it until October.
That's right.
Yeah.
You folks have heard me over the last few weeks talking about, well, over the years, especially with a lot of them, but there are people who I say, when you see their name is on an article, don't read it. Don't waste your time. Robert Shiller is one of those who's been, to me, kind of just wandering through the darkness for a long time. He's kind of the perpetual bear type, and he's been saying that there was a 70% chance of recession and all that. All year long, he's been doing that. And this week I noticed another killer headline. It says, and I quote, "Yield curve overrated as an indicator of recession." Now, it was less than a month ago when he said it was virtually a slam dunk recession this year because of the inversion in the yield curve.
Well, he's
what
gonna
happened?
Be, he's going to be right one way or the other.
Exactly. So. How are you always right? You predict the worst and the best and that it could land in between.
Yeah.
So on that, he's never been wrong. I prefer consistency. After the break, I'll show you another headline and my comments about it. This one I kind of turned over on myself, which, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself, how much fun can't you have in your life? But anyway, when we get back, we've got a bunch of other taxes topics. See, that was Freudian.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about getting your taxes done by Monday, maybe. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
Lines are open, 904-222-TALK. It's 222-8255. In fact, I see something looking like it's going to be coming in. One of the things that we want to talk about, aside from taxes, well, I'll get back to that because I see a name. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How you doing?
Okay. I wasn't going to call today, but I'm on my computer, and it's like I went to Market Watch, and it says Wall Street's fear index tumbles to a six-month low as stock market nears records.
Yeah, you can't imagine how upset that made me. It does in one respect. We don't want people so optimistic.
So at 11.95 on the VIX, there's a lot of complacency. Is that a danger sign?
It can be.
Can
yeah.
Be,
yeah. Unfortunately,
it's not a strictly positive thing. That you can't predict necessarily anything about this, but when everybody is so positive, I don't want to say greedy because I hate that word, but when everybody's so convinced that all you got to do is jump in and make money, that's when you start to get a little bit wary of what's going on.
It's, I mean, you look at this at Christmas Day, and individual investors were extremely fearful of the market and what happened.
What happened from there? Just went off on a tear. It's funny that people in the market are very good predictors. They're always 6 to 9 months ahead in aggregate. People who are out of the market and thinking about getting in, or people in the market thinking about getting out, are always wrong. The longer-term people are usually right. It's a strange little anomaly that's been followed for years, and it seems to hold some water. But am I going to worry about the fact that the fear index is down? No, I'm not.
In itself, no. But it does make me think that we might see some new highs and then a pullback.
So. Yeah. Now, I also think that politically, having people see a fear index is falling probably has to be good for the Trump side. So, like, you know, there's not a yes or no answer. That's what we're telling you. But, yeah, we saw it. We're concerned about it. Only a little.
Yeah, I read that same headline last night.
I did, too.
And didn't like it then either.
No. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? You're liking what you see?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's pretty incredible how you look at a 4 or 5 month chart and you see this V-shaped recovery in the market, and yep. It's just remarkable. I remember back in the late 90s and early 2000s, every bottom was always a W. It was a double bottom. And now we don't get double bottoms anymore. We get V-shaped bottoms.
That has been much more the trend the past few years. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
They come periodically, and when they come, they work fast.
Yeah.
But when they stop just as fast as they started.
And I wonder how much of that is directly attributable to the algorithmic
trading. Yeah, high-speed trading.
Yeah,
sure.
I think it has to be related to that.
Mm-hmm. Back when you had to do everything by doing it yourself, you enter an order through a broker or yourself online or whatever, that takes more time. But more money can trade now in a microsecond than used to trade in a minute not that many years ago because of all the high-speed stuff. I'm sure it's exacerbated the outcome. But you're right. We look at the charts all day long, of course, in the office, and those Vs are really deep and really sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to scare an average guy.
You know, I can't say which firm I work for, but I was taking calls left and right for CDs and money markets from October, November, December, and January. And now I hardly get a single phone call about a CD anymore. So what does that tell you?
Two things. The fear is down and the rates are down. Yeah, interest rates have fallen pretty steadily now for several weeks, even after the last Fed rate increase.
Yeah. I mean, mortgage rates fell from, what, pushing 5 back to 4, basically? Yes.
Now, what's cause and what's effect, I'm not exactly sure. I think there are components of both. The housing sector is getting a lot stronger because mortgage rates are falling, and interest rates are falling, I guess, maybe partly because there's no demand for CDs anymore. I don't know. It is a very strange phenomenon to see interest rates change that much without a Fed rate change. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything quite like this before.
Yeah, and I'm quoting CDs, at the six-month CDs, I'm giving quotes, and the rates are basically identical to two-year CDs.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and the short and middle part of the rate curve, it's pretty flat these days.
Yeah, if not a little bit below.
Yeah, the outer tail, the long rates seem to be perking back up again. This will pass. It always does. I don't know when exactly, but yeah, good observation. What do we do about it? Not really that sure, but I like parts of it. So do you want to take a shot at our literacy test, so to speak?
Yeah. What was the question again?
Out of the 50 states being ranked for financial literacy, with 1 being the most literate and 50 being the least, where does Florida stand?
I'm going to guess 20.
Ooh, you're pretty close, but you're a little optimistic. It's down the... Okay. Down the rung just a little bit more than that, but good guess. You got the right idea, no doubt about it. All right, good for now. Good.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. We will talk to you soon, I'm sure. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Good morning, Rebecca.
Hello.
How are you?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Never better. What's up
Great.
Today?
I just wanted to say, love listening to your show. I listen every weekend.
Well, thank you.
I love all the advice you give. It's wonderful. I'm calling today to find out about college savings. We have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old and one on the way, and we just wanted to find out what your suggestions were for the best college savings plans.
Well, it's funny. That's changed a little bit lately.
Yeah, well, it hasn't changed necessarily.
Well, it's gotten better.
Yeah, it's the one that we like has gotten better because they are now allowing us to advise on.
There's another reason, though.
Why is that?
You can't use the term college savings plan anymore for a 529 because they're not just for college anymore, so they had to drop the college out of there.
Yeah, educational savings plan. Mm-hmm. So we really like the 529 plan, and for a number of reasons. The Florida prepaid is another great option if you live here in Florida. But our favorite is the 529 plan for a number of reasons. For one, it doesn't lock you into a payment. And so if you do a 529 plan and you sign up for a monthly payment, you are locked into that like a car payment for whatever amount of time you sign up for. And if you fell on hard times, you still have to make that payment or you risk losing the benefit of that Florida prepaid plan. Now, a 529 plan doesn't work like that. It's more like a 401k. It's totally voluntary. And if you have a period of time where you're not making as much money, you don't have to contribute. But if you get a little windfall, like a bonus, you can throw it all in there. And it's really up to you. It's completely discretionary. The only thing it doesn't do that the Florida prepaid does is transfer the risk to someone else. So with the Florida prepaid, you lock in tuition at today's rates, and you don't get that benefit with the 529 plan.
As the wise old guru that I learned a lot of this stuff from said, you can do that. You give up the chance to make a killing for the blessing of not getting killed. So maybe you hit your 529 plan, and you get a couple of really good years in there, and it bounces way high. And on the other side of that, if you did a prepaid, maybe that cost you money, but what if the market goes down in that time and you're still getting the same amount of education? It's a transfer of risk product, and the risk, I think, is good as long as your kids are young enough, because time in the market is everything.
And the 529 plan that we really like is the Utah plan. It doesn't matter what state holds your plan. It's still good at any for any level of education that you want to use it for at any, in any state. Utah just happens to have a really great program.
Yes, and they recently came up with a fantastic idea, which is to allow registered investment advisors to advise on them. And as of yesterday,
we
became one of the first.
That's right. So, yeah, so my kids they have a Utah plan, and we're now advisors on that plan.
And by the way, that website is my529.org.
Did we answer your question, Rebecca?
Yes, absolutely. That was my big decision, is whether to do the Florida prepaid or the 529.
But the ages, you gave us for the kids would indicate to us that we would lean toward the 529 traditional.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wonderful.
Again, that website, my529.com. And now, of course, you can go through us and we can help people get them set up and with their contributions, their investment options, and withdrawal planning and all that, which I've got a lot more information on too, and probably won't get to that this week, but certainly in the next couple. All right, got to run. We got about 5 seconds. Thanks for the call. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And before anything else, I must point out that my erudite research department just let me know that I originally gave out the website for the 529 plan, which is my529.org, the correct way, but in summarizing after, I misapplied the .com. It is my529.org. It is not a for-profit institution. All right, this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794 and wish his wife a happy birthday while you're at it. All right, headlines to me are like fish. They get a little stale after a few days, so I want to cover this because this one is on me. Yesterday, I found a little headline grabber that I was upset about. It said, 5 Social Security mistakes people always make. Well, people don't always make any mistake like that. So I go, they got my attention, obviously, because I went to the site and read it. I'm not maximizing your earnings is the first one. Well, is that really a Social Security mistake, or is that a life mistake? 2, working less than 35 years. One way or the other. Not delaying your benefits as long as possible. This is very valid. They don't always make that mistake, but it is a valid thing. Not considering your spouse's benefits. Also a valid point that not too many people know about. So I was getting moderately upset with these folks until 5. And it said, not planning with a financial advisor. At that moment, I instantly forgave them.
All right.
It's one of the things that we include with all of our clients. We are very good at Social Security planning. And when the details get a little too complex, all we do is what people should do. You go out and research until you're absolutely sure. But we know enough of the fundamentals that building the basic plan around your Social Security withdrawal is something of a specialty. All right. The trivia question is still out there. Financial literacy on a 1 to 50 scale by state, where 1 is the most literate, 50 is the least literate. Where is Florida? And we know that they are below the number 20, which means a bigger number because it's ranked from top to bottom. All right, next.
All right, so just when you thought we were all done with the new tax law changes and things that were happening to your paycheck.
I never once dreamed it would be that easy.
No, we thought we had a year under our belt. Maybe it was going to go away, but no, that's not the case. The IRS is now coming out with a new withholding table for this year. What they're trying to do, according to them, is trying to make it so that you neither get a refund nor do you owe money at the end of the year.
Which, if you're a financial planner, would be one of your designated goals.
Yeah, so that's great for people who want that. A lot of people really like giving the government an interest-free loan all year and then getting it back in one big chunk because they just are unable to save money in any other way, and that's fine. But the IRS doesn't want you to do that. They want you to not owe or get paid back anything. So they're going to change your withholding again, which means that you are going to get a different paycheck here in one of these pay cycles. It's going to be a different number, and they probably won't tell you about it. It probably will just happen, and you're just going to have to deal with it. So I'm sorry, but that's the case. I don't know what else to tell you.
We've had an ongoing discussion, too, for basically this whole year about the W-4 form, mm-hmm. where it used to be very simple. You counted your exemptions, and that's how much was withheld. Well, without the personal exemptions in there anymore, the formula got a little more complicated. I mentioned that a week or two ago, but I just found a great synopsis of it. The thing I really liked was they were describing the complexity of the new W-4.
Right.
And here's the pull quote. It looked a lot more like the 1040 than a W-4.
That's funny. The article that I have says it'll be a lot like doing your taxes again.
Exactly. So, you know, in the name of tax simplification, Paul Ryan and Company. Yeah, it's the end of that sentence.
Yeah. Anyways.
Jeez. Okay.
That's frustrating. Enough for the frustrating news, though. There are some good things going through Congress right now.
Yes, there
that
are.
That would actually help you save more money. There's two different bills. One is called the Secure Act, and the other one is called RESA. And both of them focus on raising the limits for IRAs, which is great.
I've been complaining about that since I've been on the radio.
Yep. I mean, it's ridiculous that if you work for someone else and you're covered by a 401k, you can put away $19,000 this year without if you're under 55. And then if you work for yourself and you don't cover yourself with another plan, you can put away $6,000. So just because you're not covered by a 401k plan at work, you are penalized to the tune of $13,000 a year in your potential savings. It's ridiculous.
You've been complaining about that as long as you've been.
I hate it. I hate it. It should be exactly the same. There's no reason that it shouldn't be exactly the same.
Especially if you work for one employer that has one and you work for a similar employer that doesn't.
Right.
You're penalized for that?
And how is that your fault? It just makes no sense. And there's so many of these things. When Social Security came out, the average life expectancy was under 70 years old.
Under 65.
Right. So it wasn't designed to be a 30-year retirement annuity. It was designed to be if you ended up outliving your money type situation, then it would kick in. And they've never, they indexed it by what, 2 years?
2 years
and
over
life expectancy.
Over 30 years or so?
Yeah, has increased to, 20, 30 years. The government can't continue to do that. That's why we're broke. And that's why we have the trillions of dollars of debt that we have. They keep doing these things and then not changing them to adjust to a new reality.
The stated goal of our beloved federal government is to make individuals more dependent, or not more dependent, what am I? More self-sufficient.
Dependent
on themselves was what I was going to say, but then I discovered I didn't
today,
like that
word.
Today
that's true, but that slip of the tongue might be true in a few years.
But if you are truly going to become self-sufficient as individuals, and basically that, if you wanted to describe our day jobs, that's what they're all about, mm-hmm. is helping people become self-sufficient or financially independent, as we'd like to say. One of these proposals, which is part of the Secure Act, and the Secure Act is one of the ones Adam mentioned that has some good things in it. But one of the things that they're talking about getting rid of is the stretch IRA provision. Now, for those of you who do not know, when an IRA is inherited by a spouse, it's as simple as changing the name over to the other spouse's name. Everything else is the same. Spouses are a privileged class when it comes to the IRAs. But if you're anybody else, then the IRA is declared to be an inherited IRA, which has to be specially titled, specially handled, and the rules are a little different. Starting the year after death, I don't care what age you are when you inherit the IRA, you are required to take a required minimum distribution that year and for every year thereafter. That is true, and this is the exception to the rule for these, that is even true with a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k, that when you inherit a Roth, you still have to take required minimums. The difference is they're not taxed to you, so it's not all bad. But stretching something over your life might mean that you only have to take out, so if you're fairly young when you inherit this, you might have a percent and a half requirement for year one, whereas it's almost four if you're at 70 and a half years old. So the fundamentals of this are, if you invest it and take out these very small and very slowly increasing numbers over your life expectancy, that when you hit your own retirement age, you still got a bunch of that left, and if you play your cards right, you might even have more than you inherited.
Well, the other thing is, you aren't taking it all at one time and getting that tax bill. And the problem with taking it all in one year is that is, if it's a big enough IRA, you're more than likely going to push you through a number of tax brackets, and you're going to end up paying up to, what, 30-something percent on that last dollar you take out, instead of if you're in the 12% tax bracket and you have a big one-time hit like that, you're going to pay through the nose in taxes.
So in the infinite wisdom of our elected officials, there are two proposals under the SECURE Act, one for the House and one for the Senate. The House version would require the entire inherited IRA to be liquidated within 10 years. So if you inherit it when you're 30, by 40, you're back on your own trying to save for your retirement. Where if they just leave the darn thing alone, when you hit 65, you're going to be well on your way to having one. Well, the Senate, not ever to be outdone by the lowly House, has made that 5 years.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so the 30-year-old, 35-year-old, you got 5 years and you're out and you pay taxes on all that during the year.
And why do they want this? Because they want their money sooner rather than later.
All right, on a 1 to 50 scale, with 1 being the most literate, Florida ranks number 23. Our old hometown, Wisconsin, is 21, so we moved from about the same to about the same. The worst one of all is Louisiana. Get on it. All right, pay your taxes. Come back next week. We'll see you then. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.